The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno. A little later on the program, Stevie and Don will be here to react to Roberto Martinez coming out and saying that he thinks Rudiger should have been sent off in the Champions League final. We start, though, with everything La Liga, which, of course, we need a bit of Sid Lowe here. And there he is in all his glory. We start with the front page of AS today, of course, a Madrid-based sports newspaper. Zidane writing an open letter. I'm leaving because the club aren't giving me the trust that I need. Let's go into a little more detail, shall we? I'm not abandoning ship and I'm not tired of coaching. I'm going because I feel that the club no longer gives me the trust I need. I'd have liked my relationship with the club and the president to have been a bit different to that of other managers. I've contributed building the relationship with the players and the 150 people who work around the team. It hasn't been understood that a great club is also sustained by those relationships. In fact, I've even been criticized for that. It hurt me so much when I read in the press after a defeat that they were going to sack me if I didn't win the next game. Those messages deliberately leaked to the media created negative interference with the squad. I am not the best coach in the world, but I am capable of giving the strength and trust that everyone needs in their work, whether that's a player, a member of the coaching staff, or any employee. I know perfectly well what the team needs. Blooming X, Sid. That's more than we've heard from Zidane in that letter than we did 5 years with him at Real Madrid.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? I mean, it's extraordinary. In truth, the content was the kind of stuff that we largely knew, the kind of stuff that we largely would have expected had he ever spoken publicly. What we didn't expect was for him never to do so. At least not in these terms, at least not with this clarity, and certainly not in this rather old-fashioned approach, which is to have an open letter for a newspaper. You know, he didn't choose his Instagram, he didn't choose his Twitter feed, he went straight through it, through the sports newspaper AS, and it's very, very direct indeed. It's very damaging, I think, to Florentino Perez, the president, and I think it's very telling, because almost more than giving the reasons for him leaving, what he's done, really, is, of course, give a portrait of the mechanics inside the club.
So, what was the point of it, Sid? Why did he choose to go so public?
That's a very good question. And to be honest with you, it's one to which I don't know the answer. It's one to which I can speculate on some of the answers, perhaps just a sense that he's so upset about it, so angry about it, that he feels, no, actually, I'm not going to let this go. I'm not going to let this look like I've just walked out on a club for a third time without reasons. I want people to know that there are reasons. I wonder if as well it's his way of saying that, and he obviously mentions this when he says, I'm not abandoning ship and I'm not tired of coaching. It's his way of alerting perhaps future clubs that, look, this isn't because I'm burnt out. It's to do with the specific circumstances of Real Madrid. I wonder as well whether there is a sense of him just deciding that, well, actually, I think that people need to know what's going on at Real Madrid. And so there is a series of different elements there. I must say, though, I think everybody is surprised. As I say, not surprised necessarily by the content of the letter, but by the existence of the letter.
So there is, of course, a vacant managerial spot now at Real Madrid. You take a look at the bookies. It's Antonio Conte who's odds on to get the job. Pochettino, of course, is reports that he wants out of PSG at 5-2. Raul, who's been working with the youngsters at Madrid at 5-1. And then Ancelotti coming in at 12-1. Joaquin Love at 16. Xabi Alonso 20. Rafa Benitez to return 20-1. Ali, who on that list?
Well, given what we know is the current situation at Real Madrid and on the heels of what Zinedine Zidane has just said in his relationship with the president of Florentino Perez, I don't think Antonio Conte is a fit in this. A guy who...
It's a car crash.
It is a car crash waiting to happen. And so I don't see that as a match made in heaven. I mean, you got to go down the list. The situation with Pochettino is convoluted, it's complicated. Raul doesn't quite have the experience, but he would seem to be the guy that has equity with the club because he's a club legend. Did that work at Juventus with Pirlo? No, it didn't. And I keep going down the list. I would say, honestly, if I were making a decision here with Real Madrid, I would go and knock on the door of Carlo Ancelotti.
Right.
A man who knows this club inside and out and who has a personality similar to that of Zidane that is willing to deal with a few things here and there and kind of surf above all that and just say to himself, you know what, I'm just here to manage this talented team and make sure that this team performs out on the field. The guys above Ancelotti, I just feel like there is so much that can go wrong, much more so than can go right.
Yes, if you look at Antonio Conte, and it's a surprise that he is favourite, considering we know exactly how he wants things to be, which is the complete opposite, really, that Real Madrid will offer.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in part it depends on whether you look at this as a short-term appointment or a mid-term appointment. I think a long-term appointment just doesn't exist. I think we know that. One of the things that was very telling about what Zidane said in that letter was he talked about how he had hoped that his relationship might be different to some of the other managers. Now, look, I realise this is interpretive, but of course what he's effectively saying there is that exactly the things that he's complaining about, previous managers complained about as well, that this was their experience too. And one thing is absolutely for sure, Carlo Ancelotti experienced this kind of thing. Vicente del Bosque experienced this kind of thing. Manuel Pellegrini experienced this kind of thing. You know, it goes all the way through the club. It's happened to other managers. Carlos Queiroz certainly experienced this kind of thing. And so you just wonder if you look at that, and for example, you know, you've mentioned Ancelotti in that list there. Ancelotti knows almost as well as Zidane how things are at Real Madrid. And the question is, would he accept that? Would he accept that given the way that he was forced out last time, given the kind of things that were said about him both privately and then, of course, indirectly, publicly, because of those strategic leaks that Zidane was talking about, does he really want to go back into that environment? The other question, I suppose, is whether by virtue of Zidane saying this, that forces a slight shift at Real Madrid, that maybe they think twice about some of the ways in which the media is used. They think twice about some of the things that are said about managers and that maybe they back away from if you like, that kind of constant whispering about managers. So that brings us to Conte. As you say, in theory at least, Conte is an accident waiting to happen at a club like Real Madrid. And yet, if you look at it from a short-term point of view, Conte does kind of fit Florentino Perez's model up to a point in that one of the criticisms that Florentino has always had about Zidane was the sense that he was too soft with the players. And you see that in Zidane's letter. Very, very explicitly you see it in Zidane's letter when he says you need a good relationship. You need a closeness between manager, players, staff, the 150 people around the club. And at times I was even criticised for that. What he is saying there is at the upper echelons of the club, fundamentally the president, but also the people around him, they thought I was too soft with the players. Now, right now, what reputation does Antonio Conte have? The complete opposite. So in the very short term, at least, that's very attractive from Real Madrid's point of view.
Meanwhile, on Saturday, the front cover of AS was talking about Real Madrid's first signing of the summer, David Alaba. Interesting stuff from Raf Honigstein tweeting out that's £25 million gross or £420,000 a week in Premier League terms. Talking about his wages, Bayern offered £16 million gross a year. It's an absolute mystery why Real Madrid and Barcelona are in financial trouble. So this is quite something, isn't it? Considering that all we've heard from Real Madrid is that we haven't got any money, we need a Super League, basically, to raise funds. Yet here they are, paying a world-class defender, no doubt about that, so much more than Bayern offered.
Let's go back to that interview that Florentino Perez did. Not the first one on Chiringuito where everything kind of fell apart, but his second interview that he did on Cadena Ser in Spain when he was asked about the financial situation and he was talking about how difficult it was and how bad the situation was. And he painted a really apocalyptic picture. And you know, he was asked at one point about Mbappé and he said, no, look, if there's no Super League, there'll be no Mbappés, there'll be no Haalands, there'll be none of these big signings, not just for us, but for anyone. And about 5 minutes later, they said, so you're not getting Mbappé then? He said, well, I didn't say that. So this kind of fits with this situation with David Alaba, which is, you know, there isn't really the money. And yet, of course, you still need to build a squad. Of course, one way of looking at this, and it's perhaps a bit oversimplistic, but let's go for it, is basically the money going to David Alaba is the money that would have gone to Sergio Ramos, who, of course, hasn't renewed his contract. I would be very, very surprised now if he does so. So I guess the money is there and waiting for them. But it's certainly true, as Raf points out in that tweet, that this is offering the kind of money that really big, really powerful, really economically sound clubs couldn't pay, and Real Madrid, who had pleaded poverty, are now going to do exactly that.
Speaking of free transfers, Barcelona acquired Kun Agüero today. This is what he had to say about the possibility of playing with Messi. We hope to play together, of course. What's happening with Leo is a decision he will take with the club. If he stays here, which I think he will, we will try to give our best for the club. That's got to be positive news, isn't it, for Barcelona, hoping that Messi will stay?
Well, I just love the fact, Dan, that this is a new signing for Barcelona and everyone's excited about the possibility that someone else stays, not about the possibility that he comes. Agüero did was tell us, hey, Messi might still be here. I mean, look, yeah, it is, of course, it's positive news. If only, you know, before we look into the stage of Messi's career, the cost of him and all the rest of it, it's positive news because this is Barcelona's project. It's the thing that Joan Laporta has been most insistent upon. So even if you're one of those people who believes that perhaps financially and in sporting terms, moving on from Messi wouldn't be a terrible idea, the fact is that you've got a club who's determined for him to stay. And if that side of the project collapsed, then of course everything else collapses in its wake. So it's very, very good news from Barcelona's point of view. As someone who's loved watching Messi play for 15 years, I think it's good news as well that he's staying in Spain. And in terms of how well Kun Agüero fits with him, well, there's no doubt, of course, that he's very close to Messi, that he's a talented footballer. We're still not sure exactly what kind of role he will play. Of course, he's of an age where there are one or two doubts. And I think perhaps the other doubt has to be, again, to take it away from Agüero himself, to look at this and say, OK, so if Messi stays, and if Agüero arrives, who leaves? Because you can't keep those two, and Ansu Fati, and Antoine Griezmann, and Ousmane Dembélé, and Coutinho. You just can't do it. And so there will have, and of course, people like Trincao and Martin Braithwaite, there will have to be departures and very significant ones. Laporta has said that it's, I think, over 110% of their budget is currently going on salaries. Now, obviously, the fact that it's over 100% is in itself problematic. But even if it was 99%, it would be. You know, salaries of your budget should be around about 60%. They are in desperate trouble, Barcelona.
And then, of course, Manchester City legend Kun Agüero coming out and saying, we all know that Barca is the best club in the world, so I think I made a great decision.
Sergio, buddy, was there a decision to be made? Or was this decision made for you already?
Because indeed, it was Manchester City that essentially said, it's been great, Kun. It's been fantastic. We've had great history together, but it's time for you to go.
Yep.
And then Barcelona on the other side is, well, we can't afford anything because, as just Sid explained, they're over budget already when it comes to players. We need free transfers. We need players that are desperate to come here. And so it is a match made because of the necessities of both. Of Kun Agüero, desperate to find a club, and Barcelona, desperate to find somebody who's willing to come to them for free. So, hey, it works out. It works out up until Sergio Agüero's not scoring goals. If Sergio Agüero does score goals, then, hey, we saw this coming all along. It was part of the plan. This is the sort of the club that we are right now. I think it's just a desperate decision because you need to make this sort of choices when it comes to this sort of players.
Barcelona are an absolute mess. Of course, another side who in theory are still looking for a coach, and this kind of played out really publicly last week. The front page of Sport, the Catalan newspaper, with this interview with Joan Laporta saying Messi is going well, but it was what was inside about Koeman was interesting. Ronald Koeman has a contract in place, but I don't believe in transitional seasons. We'll continue to speak to him and make further decisions next week. You have to understand that he was a coach that was already in place with a year on his deal when we took over. Ronald will be the first to know our decision. Now, interestingly then, Ronald Koeman's agency started tweeting out, imagine, I want to marry you, but I have doubts. Give me 2 weeks to find a better partner.
Okay.
If I can't find the right person, we will get married anyway.
Ooh, that's it's quite like a proposal.
It's like our nights out back in Madrid, Sid.
I think there are details there that the audience does not need to know.
So, what a mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, in a way, look, you've just posed the question to me, but there's nothing more you can say, is there, than to pick up on that tweet from Ronald Koeman's agency. Yeah. I mean, that is it in a nutshell. And you know, let's say, for argument's sake, that they don't find someone else, that they don't find a way that they can pay to get rid of Koeman, because of course that's part of the point here, that we're talking about a lot of money to buy him off, to buy him out of his contract. And clearly the meeting last week, part of the discussions there, although the meeting was short, part of the discussions there were Koeman's people saying, well, look, if he goes, you pay up, because that's the way this works. Imagine that they do eventually say, okay, look, let's stay together. Yeah, but I mean, what kind of relationship is that going to be? And also, very, very importantly, it's not just about Koeman and the club. It's about what that says to the dressing room. It's about the level of authority that that manager has. It's about his position of strength and his mindset and everything that goes with it. And that, you know, look, weird things happen in football, but that is not a good set of circumstances.
Who's going to be the new coach then, Sid? Zidane?
It would be quite amazing, wouldn't it, that if suddenly Zidane goes, oh, I'll tell you what, I'll go to Barcelona. Zidane is in a mad sort of way capable of doing that. I don't think he will. But I honestly don't know, because I think Barcelona are in a very difficult position, because the people that they want, there are reasons why they don't want to do it now. Of course, Guardiola would be the dream. Xavi Hernandez, I think there's a sense that it's possibly a bit early, but I must confess I'm not ruling out that happening. Then them looking for people with some sort of Barcelona connection, even if it's a relatively vague one. So you've got people like Roberto Martinez, you've got Mikel Arteta. But I must confess, there's a bit of me at the moment thinks, I don't know how they get out of this bind. I don't know how they use these 2 weeks well enough to be able to say, OK, Ronald, we'll do this deal. It's been lovely, but cheerio.
The one bright spot for Barcelona at the moment is the women, a historic treble, Sid. They have been exceptional this season.
I mean, just off the scale brilliant. It is genuinely unbelievable. You look at the fact that they've won the treble, obviously, but look at their league form to give you the best possible example of this. Played 28, won 28, scored, I believe it's 139, conceded just seven. Just seven. I mean, it's just extraordinary. They're a fabulous team, and they're a team that this is born partly through that failure in the Champions League final a couple of years ago. And after that game, the team captains kind of got to the coach in the airport on the way back and said, look, we want to do whatever it takes to win this tournament, to win this Champions League. And what it took, in truth, was more of everything. That little bit more serious, that little bit more aggressive, that little bit harder working, everything they were doing before, a very, very clear identity, but with an almost obsessive drive towards this Champions League. And this is very much, I think, the culmination of that. Of course, the question now is if they now go on to dominate women's football for a generation, maybe not a generation, but for the next two or three years at least.
Great stuff, Sid. Just a reminder, ESPN AFC with you throughout the summer. You can join us every single day. What a moment for all of us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Kevin De Bruyne, of course, forced off with that injury in the second half of the Champions League final. He tweeted on Sunday, "Hi guys, just got back from the hospital. My diagnosis is acute nose bone fracture and left orbital fracture. I feel okay now, still disappointed about yesterday, obviously, but we will be back." Rudiger then tweeted, "I'm really sorry for Kevin De Bruyne's injury. Of course, this was not intentional for me. I've already been in touch with Kevin personally and I really wish him a speedy recovery and hope we can see him back on the pitch very soon again." Now, this is what Roberto Martinez had to say about the challenge. "When you look at the replay, there's no clash of heads. He's properly leaving the shoulder against Kevin, but that leaves a sour taste because Rudy is holding his head. It's almost that he wants to show that he's hiding something. For me, it was excessive force and it was reckless and it should have been a red card." Well, as promised, Don and Stevie with us. Stevie, should it have been a red card?
No. Hold on, let me guess. Is Martinez his manager by any chance with Belgium? Oh, yes, he is.
Oh,
that's the reason he's saying it's a red card. No other reason at all. It's not a red card. It's a yellow card. What Rudiger did, I've done it 1,000 times. I've had many others. You just stay in the way and block the run. And the fact that De Bruyne has ran into him with the side of his face isn't really Rudiger's fault. So, yes, Rudiger gets the yellow. He deserved the yellow. It is not a red whatsoever.
So is it De Bruyne's fault that he broke his face, Stevie?
Yes.
Wow!
What? Well, yeah, you've got to have your wits about you. You've got to know when somebody's going to try and block you or somebody's going to have a go at you or pull you or grab you. So, yes, in some ways, De Bruyne just shut off, shut down, was too busy watching the ball. You've got to look after yourself on the field.
Don, should it be in a red card?
Well, according to Stevie, De Bruyne probably should have deserved the yellow card for causing all the damage. No, it's not a red card. It's not. Pros do this 1,000 times a game. You just stand your ground. What Rudiger's done, Dan, he knows exactly what he's doing in terms of blocking them off, but there's no fault of Rudiger breaking a nose or a cheekbone. It's not intentional. That was just an accident. It was a freak accident that happens once in a blue moon. Yes, it was a foul. Yes, it was a yellow card. But I agree with Stevie. Martinez is just looking after his player.
So Don agrees with me. It's De Bruyne's own fault.
No, I didn't say that.
I didn't think this would be the cause in which the conversation would go. Ali, red card?
No, not a red card. I agree with the assessment of Stevie and Don on what Rudiger is doing. I disagree entirely and completely with the fact that now all of a sudden this is Kevin De Bruyne's fault. That is not an argument that I'm going to sign up for. But I would say that Rudiger knows exactly what he's doing, but it's not worthy of a red card.
Now, obviously, we discussed a lot, haven't we, over the last couple of days, the decision not to play Fernandinho or Rodri. Now, this is what the ESPN Research group came up with tonight. This, obviously, before kickoff, will be Manchester City's 61st match this season in all competitions, but it's only the second time that neither Rodri nor Fernandinho have started for the club. The only other match in the Champions League group stage against Olympiacos, which they won 3-0. Belgium journalist Christophe Terreur tweeting out, the Manchester City midfield versus Chelsea in the Tuchel age played two holding midfielders in the semi-final. That was Rodri and Fernandinho. One in the Premier League, that was just Rodri, and then none in the Champions League final. Stevie, they of course lost all three. Stevie, it's the first time we've really had the chance to speak to you about that decision. Are we making too much of it? How much is down to that selection affecting the rest of the group and the way in which City played?
No, I don't think we're making too much of it at all. I was shocked. I thought both of them would play, both Rodri, Fernandinho, and then have Gundogan sitting in front with De Bruyne being the false nine. I certainly didn't think Sterling would start either, but as far as the middle of the park, I was shocked. You know, at the end of the day, you need to control the middle of the park. And when he played those three, they absolutely dominated. Plus, you've got the goal threat of Gundogan coming from midfield. So I was surprised. I was shocked. It didn't work. I think that was a big mistake.
Don?
I totally agree. I mean, the knock-on effect of Gundogan playing as a holding midfield player, he's Man City's top scorer this season with 17 goals. So you need a holding midfield player. The other surprise was Zinchenko starting. I know he's had a good end to the season, but Cancelo, if you're going to dominate the ball, would have been a better option at left back. And the fact that Ferran Torres didn't even make it on the pitch towards the end, nor Cancelo, it was a little bit strange, really. Pep using three substitutions when he could have brought Cancelo on and Torres on for a bit more pace. I understood the Raheem Sterling one. The one I couldn't get my head around was why Bernardo Silva started. I was watching that game unfold in the first 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, and I'm thinking, the guy's talented. You know, he's got a wand of a left foot. He can control the ball. But he's not got no pace. He can't go past anyone. And he couldn't really get going in the game. De Bruyne couldn't get going neither. And I think it's one of them games, Dan, where I think you analyse the Man City performance and the selection to death, and rightly so. But got to give Chelsea credit. I mean, there was a stat on BT. The guy showed it on BT. Between the back line of Chelsea, the back five of Chelsea and Timo Werner, it was 17 metres. So there was no room for Man City to play through. And Chelsea could have, you know, Chelsea played an incredible game. They were absolutely superb. And Man City could have still been playing now, and they still wouldn't have scored. Chelsea were that good.
A lot more on that final and Don's prediction that Chelsea had a 0% chance of winning the Champions League on extra time. What? Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel.
passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Less than 2 weeks now till the Euros kick off. Hello. June the 11th, of course, we'll have you covered throughout the tournament on ESPN and ABC. On June the 7th, a very special article will be published on the website where we've asked all of the journos basically to pick their best Euro moments. Graham Hunter has gone for Euro 2012. Sid Lowe back with us. Sid, this, of course, the time that Spain made it three big tournaments in a row, something we'd never seen before.
Yeah, and here's the strange thing about this final, and I was at the final in Ukraine, as indeed was Graham. Spain had won the European Championships in 2008. They'd won the World Cup in 2010. Winning the European Championships in 2012 was a unique achievement. And it was, of course, the pinnacle of an extraordinary hat-trick. And yet, funnily enough, going into that final, there was a very powerful sense that they needed to not just win, but really win well. All the way through the tournament, there'd been this sense that, well, they're not quite as impressive as they once were. There was this debate about whether Spain were boring, which Vicente del Bosque found incredibly irritating. And he got very genuinely very wound up about it. And it was kind of recurring, this theme, all the way through the tournament. And so it kind of felt like when they got to the final, they needed to play well. And of course, they got to the final and they just took Italy to pieces. Scored four times, played absolutely fantastically, their best performance of the tournament. And it really did feel like, okay, this is an era that has been rounded off now, not just the European Championships.
It was interesting, wasn't it? Because there was this kind of theory that it was too much tiki-taka, uh-huh, too much sideways passing. Uh-huh. The expectation had been risen so high. But still, you look at the quality on that. Iniesta, yeah, player of the tournament, and this is where he was like, yeah.
Yeah. And if you needed any sort of confirmation of, exactly, Iniesta, which, yeah, that in itself is ridiculous. But if you go back to earlier in that tournament, Italy and Spain had played in the group stage, and it had been 1-1, and it had been sort of kind of like, it looks like Spain is a little uncomfortable.
Yes.
It doesn't quite feel like this is the same team. This may just be the end of an era. Okay, nonsense. They got to the final, and when you think about Italy in a final, the last thing that comes up would be them getting destroyed and taken to pieces in the manner in which they did and in the manner in which they were. They had no chance. The moment that game started, game was over.
Yeah.
Spain was that much better than Italy. And we're talking Italy, final, major tournament, and they had no chance. They did not have a prayer in that game, and it was all because of the quality of Spain and certainly the individual quality of a guy like Andres Iniesta, who, every time that he touched the ball, something magical was happening, whether it was a pass, whether it was dribbling, was creating for himself, creating for others. If you needed any confirmation on Spain or any confirmation on Andres Iniesta, just go back and watch that game.
Yeah, it just obviously an historic achievement, which has its problems in itself, Sid, because now that Spain jersey is very, very heavy because you have everyone who grew up watching them win everything now struggling.
Yeah, I remember having this conversation, I think it was with Juan Mata after the World Cup in South Africa, and saying to him, you do realise that this never goes away now, right? So, so I said to him, you know, we won the World Cup in 1966 and we're still banging on about it. You know, every tournament is still 66. You've won this now. Every team that follows will have to follow that. And obviously in 2012 they were able to do so, but it still happens now. You know, so they go to the 2014 World Cup. and don't get beyond the first knockout round. In 2016, they were knocked out by France. In 2018, of course, they were knocked out by Russia. In each of those tournaments, they just didn't progress, and didn't just play poorly, but you know, obviously in Brazil, they were the first team home. They were out after the second group game. You know, the third group game just didn't matter, and so that weighs on them. And then you go into this tournament, and one of the things that's kind of in the background all the time is, well, yeah, it's not the same generation as it was. And yet at the same time, the bar is kind of set there. Now, I think there's a recognition that it's no longer the same generation. Obviously, the only players left, I think, at this summer's Euros will be Alba and Busquets, at a guess, given that Ramos isn't there. There may be someone else who I'm missing, but I think that's it. And so, yeah, that is still a weight upon their shoulders. And I think there is a realisation now that, OK, it's gone. Let's not load them with this. But you kind of can't help it, as I say. We're still talking about 1966. How can they possibly not talk about 2010?
Yeah, we won the World Cup, Ali, in 1966.
Did you?
Yeah.
Unheard.
Yeah, no controversy, nothing.
You've never heard, right. Had you?
Of course, loads of international friendlies coming up in the preparation for the start of the Euros. Interesting to see Karim Benzema, of course, feature for France. They take on Wales, that game live on ESPN2 on Wednesday at 2:50 Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next with a very special guest. What? Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Ali with us here in the studio. Don with us. As is Stevie with quite the self-portrait behind him.
What? Yeah, it's actually you.
Well, I don't wear glasses.
Well, I told you to show you the pig, didn't I?
How does that work?
After I showed you the cow last week.
Yes, the cow.
The who?
The cow.
Well, I always keep my promises, Dan.
Stevie, it really does look like you.
And you know what? You're not far wrong.
I know! Hey. I just noticed that.
Look at the glasses.
I know, that's what we're looking at. Hey, give us... What? What's the history behind it, Stevie?
Well, it hangs in the toilet, doesn't it? Of course it does.
Yes, it kind of come with the house. I imagine somewhere along the line, someone purchased it.
Aye, I told you, it's for the bathroom. So when you're in there doing what you do, then you kind of have a little giggle.
Is it meant to be you, though, Stevie? Is it meant to be you? Did you buy?
Don't ask
thinking,
a stupid question like that.
Who buys a pig with glasses on?
Yeah. Why is it got?
Hey, if you don't like it, that's fine. It's not my fault you don't have any taste.
Why has it got a bulletproof vest on? What's that about?
I've got no idea.
It's a bow tie.
I never bought it.
You think it was wearing Kevlar?
I don't know what it was wearing. It's going to capture. Little hoop earring
no
as well.
I have no clue at all. I just said I'd let you see it last week, didn't I?
Yeah, don't get defensive about it, Stevie. It's fine.
Hey, everybody's a critic of art, huh?
No, exactly.
Apparently. Hey, just let him be.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Absolutely.
There we go.
And if you're with Stevie, then
meanwhile,
you know
Dom is coming to America next week.
Hey!
What a moment.
Yes.
But he's scared. You're scared to drive, Dom.
Oh, come on, Dom.
I just think it's too much stress, Dan.
Why?
I've got to work with you for 2 weeks. That's stressful enough. I
right.
don't want to be rocking up at the airport and then someone going, yeah, there's the keys to a car. Go and drive on the wrong side of the road. And by the way, the red lights don't really mean red. You can still go.
No, no.
What?
I'm sorry. Wait, hold on a second. You think we're animals over here? We stop at red light.
Does the red light mean a red light over there? Can't you go, can't you, with a red light?
You can turn right on a red light. Yes, Don.
You see?
Yeah, and that just blows your mind.
Yeah, it blows my mind. Just get a cab.
Get
the stress out of it.
Big time. Right. So we're just going to ignore that a certain someone said Chelsea had a 0% chance of winning the Champions League. Oh, they know who they
who
are.
Who said that?
John Hutchison.
Hey!
I think I was in panic mode. I must have been.
Yes.
I must have been in panic mode.
Were you driving at the time?
You saw a red light. No, what do
Ali,
I do now?
Ali, you've guessed, mate. You've guessed. Maths is not my strong point now. Percentages. I've got no idea.
A lot of abuse. How does Stevie feel after he predicted that City would win by a landslide and they didn't even get a shot on target, Stevie?
Hey!
Well, I've got to say, I'm going to stick up for myself. I had no idea that Guardiola was going to pick such a stupid team. All the things he was saying about how it's all about us and, we're settled and we're going to just... You know, he basically made out there's no tinkering. We know exactly what we're doing. We're good to go. And then we get the team sheet and you're like, what?
We should just do the whole thing without making any reference to it.
You put the picture in front of Stevie's face and just let him talk behind it.
I know.
But you're telling me that there is a matching picture?
No, there's the cow, which is just like a normal Scottish cow thing.
Okay, so no
glasses.
And then
this livens things up in the bathroom.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's what you
so
need.
So it's not a combo package of pictures.
It's the earring. It's the earring that's tickling me.
Oh. Don, what is the percentage?
Oh, no, no, no. We're going to go down this path.
Mm-mm. Of Kante winning the Ballon d'Or ahead of Lewandowski.
That is a close one. I would say 60-40
in
Lewandowski's favour.
Really, Don? Even though Kante go on, what if Kante wins the Euros?
Then it would probably be Kante.
Right.
Breaking Gerd Müller's record of 41, I believe, in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
He should have won it the year before. I think he's due Lewandowski, but I don't think you're going to argue either way.
Stevie?
Lewandowski.
Really? That definitive?
Yeah. Yes. Listen, Kante was fantastic in this final, but, you know, he's had some injury problems. You know, it's not like he's been like this. The way he played in this game, he hasn't played like that all season long.
Well, he was man of the match in both semi-finals, Stevie.
Well,
it's not like this is a one-off.
It's just two games. We're talking about a season here, Dan. Lewandowski, from the first whistle of the first game to the last whistle of his last game, has been absolutely fantastic every single time he stepped on the field. Plus the matter of 40 goals swings it.
No, I get it. But if Kante goes on and win the European Championship, then that's another big performance on the big stage, which has got to add to the argument as to why he should win it.
It will make it a better argument, but Lewandowski should still win it for me.
Okay. Well, it's not the last time. I'm sure we'll discuss this. Which Chelsea Champions League winning side was superior, Don? 2012 or 2021?
2021.
Really?
I was looking at the Chelsea side that won it in 2012, and I could probably only get Petr Cech, Ashley Cole, Frank Lampard and Didier Drogba into this current team. Maybe Gary Cahill at a push because John Terry didn't play in the final. So I think there's more players playing for Chelsea now than that they were better in 2012, I think.
Stevie?
Well, it depends. It depends if we're talking about the teams that actually took the field.
Yeah.
Probably if it's just about the teams that took the field, then I think this Chelsea side shades it. But if we're talking about the actual... You know, man, if we're talking about how many players, you know, if everybody's fit, you've got, like, say, Eden Hazard that never played, John Terry and Gary Cahill. You're taking them, no question. You're taking Lampard. To Drogba. I mean,
the team in 2012 was the best.
I would say the 2012 squad was better. The actual teams that stepped on the field, I would say this one.
Right, we need to get serious now, Stevie. Oh. Do you want to take the pig down?
Uh-oh. So he can concentrate and focus.
If you want.
No, it's a serious question.
Okay.
Stevie, what is your view?
Well, is it drawing your eyes to it? Is it doing one of them?
Well, it's impossible really like to listen to anything you're saying movie. With a pig with glasses and a hooped earring and sort of the multicolored. Oh,
no.
Oh, there he goes.
Don't do it.
He's going.
Oh.
No, I think I can see a tear in his eye.
Oh, man.
Honestly.
Yeah, because he's about to become
bacon. Considering where he's been hung for the last 20 years, I would definitely have a tear in my eye. Okay, Stevie, what is your view on the Trent Alexander-Arnold situation after possibly not being included in England's squad for the Euros? This, of course, it's been reported pretty much widespread. A lot of journalists, including ESPN's, saying that he won't be included in the squad.
Well, I think he should be included in the squad. When you're picking a squad, you need a bag of licorice, all sorts, basically. You need everything. You need people
in place
defend.
Of who,
you need
Stevie,
people
if we've
forward.
Got if we got Trippier, Reece James, and Kyle Walker.
My two defenders are Walker and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Not
because
Trippier.
Walker can defend. No.
He just won the La Liga.
No, he's not as good as them two.
Okay.
Why? Because he plays in Spain.
Right, hold on a second. Are you telling me? Hold on. I'm just going to ask you a straightforward question. Is Trent Alexander's balls into the box better than Trippier?
Trippier is a better defender.
Right, well, that's why you need all kinds of different kinds of players, because when you get Walker, if you need to defend, then you play Kyle Walker. If you need to win games and you need to get forward, or you need to make a substitution during a game and take Kyle Walker off because you need goals, then Trent Alexander-Arnold's your man. I mean, I actually don't understand how Reece James, so late in the day, has come into the play here. I've been listening to people talking how fantastic he was in the Champions League final, right? Well, guess what? He nearly cost them the Champions League final. Early doors, defensively, he was awful when Sterling got through. And the only reason he didn't go behind is because Sterling hasn't been at his best. It was horrible defending from Reece James. So don't tell me Reece James is in there because he's great going forward and he can defend. Because defensively, he's still got problems. And again, that's why I would have him. I would have Trent over Reece James, because Trent is also better putting balls in a box than Reece James is.
Don?
I agree. I think if you ask Harry Kane which fullback he'd want on his side, I think he'd say Trent. I understand
he's
the argument
coach.
If you. No, I know, but what I'm trying to say is it's a player's opinion and it's a centre forward's opinion because he's going to be getting service. Does he want service off Trippier? No. Does he want service from Kyle Walker? Probably not.
Wait, everybody Reece keeps James. Telling me the art of defence is dead, but surely we need good defenders in, which Trippier's proven to be.
But look at the numbers that Trent's been producing for years and years in terms of his assists. Don't you want them if you're Harry Kane? Oh,
yeah. But don't you want a defence? Shouldn't there be enough attack?
What did I start off by saying, Mr. Thomas?
Hey, sit
the
back.
The first thing I said was you need to have all kinds of players. You've got Kyle Walker who can defend, and you've got Trent Alexander who can go forward. Now, depending on what you need in the game, it depends on which one you play.
And I just give you
any chance you can clean your ears out.
Wan-Bissaka's better than all of them defensively, but he's not as good as Trent and Reece James going forward.
Wan-Bissaka couldn't cross the road, by the way.
Didn't say that. I said defensively. Defensively, he's better. Going forward, he's nowhere near Trent.
Can I just give you a little bit of context on Trippier? Not that this is any of my business, because obviously this is all about the England conversation.
Well, they're both Scottish, so don't care.
Okay. In any case, Trippier was critical to the success of Atletico Madrid this season, to the point to where whenever he was suspended and he was out for 10 matches, they struggled. And this team struggled as a whole because they did not have that outlet down the right-hand side.
Another point for context here. Kevin Trippier did score a free kick goal in the World Cup.
Doesn't count. Doesn't play in the Premier League. Don doesn't care.
Oh,
okay. Oh, come on.
That's it.
This is factual information. I'm not making this up.
Come on, no one can tell me Kieran Trippier is better than Trent Alexander-Arnold or Reece James as a fullback.
I'm just saying.
Come on.
I'm giving you factual information, not opinion, but actual things that have happened in the past. That's all.
What do the guys think about Bale's comments on retiring after Euro 2020?
Well,
he's semi-retired already.
It feels like he's already been leaning in that direction for a while now. He is gonna cherish the moment in which he hits the golf course on a daily basis. That's gonna be amazing.
Go on, Stevie.
Hey, how are we gonna know whether he's retired or not?
Yeah.
He hasn't been doing anything for the last year and a half.
Oh, his scoring percentage ratio was better than anyone else in the Premier League, Steve Nicol. I take that.
Oh, right. Mind you. Great start.
If Trippier was defending,
he wouldn't get 8 months.
Oh, Ali. With CONMEBOL moving from Argentina to Brazil, what a mess. How much an effect will that have on teams, players and coaching staff on preparing for the matches? Does this give Brazil an advantage over the other national teams?
Well, at this point, I'm more concerned about whether this tournament is going to take place at all.
Yeah.
Because they just mentioned Argentina, but initially it was going to be Argentina and Colombia. And Colombia was the first one to go. Then Argentina said, oh, we got this. It's all covered. And then not so much. COVID all over the place. They're moving into Brazil, who, if you know anything about anything right now in South America and travel issues and whatever, one of the recommendations is don't go to Brazil. And yet this is where the tournament is going to be. If they had a way in which they could manage this properly, and mind you, it's in 2 weeks, a tournament.
Yes.
I would assume that CONMEBOL would love to have this tournament here in the United States.
Right.
In some sort of bubble situation.
Okay.
But I think it's too short of a period of a time. And to your question, yes, Brazil, of course, has an advantage because you're playing at home.
What percentage, Don?
Oh, no.
Here we go.
Do you give Scotland making it out of the group?
Hold on, hey Don, I can't even remember who's in the group now.
Hey!
Can you remind me who's in Scotland's group?
Czech Republic.
England, Croatia, Czech Republic.
England.
Yeah, it's not happening. We're not gonna.
Will you score a goal?
5%.
Yes. No, it's more than that. It's more than 5.
Go on,
more
Don.
Than 5, Stevie.
What are you saying?
15.
15%?
Yeah, I'll raise it to 15.
There we go. Final one.
All depends on the first game. If we beat, I think it's the Czech Republic in the first game, which we have to beat them.
Okay.
We've got a sniff.
Right. What if you don't?
Then the sniff is gone.
Final question. When Stevie decided to scare Craig and run away from the bear, was that the last time Stevie ran? Could the FC team have run away from a bear at their peak? Oh, there is this is another bear, isn't it? This isn't where you pretended the bear was chasing Craig and he fell for it. Stevie, could you run away from a bear normally?
Not now?
You have to.
Who would? Not now. Actually, the thing is, just in case, if you ever encounter a bear coming at you,
yes,
then don't run.
Oh.
What you do is you make yourself big.
Okay.
You make yourself big.
Ooh, look big.
And you scream as loud as you can.
Oh, give us an example, Stevie.
Yeah, right.
And show them the pig picture.
Oh, dear.
You're going down the Bruce Gobbler route there, Stevie. Yeah. You're going down the Bruce.
Oh, not the crocodile. Were you scared the crocodile?
He scared the crocodile, didn't he?
He dove under the water.
Right.
He dove under the water and he came face to face with a crocodile. We went, what did you do? And he went, I outsighted it. I stared into its eyes and it turned and swam away. Yeah, right.
That's usually how it works.
He had quite a few stories, didn't he, Bruce Grobbelaar, from what he had told me.
You know his best one? His best one,
Cobra.
He said he was, when he was in the army.
Cobra.
You can tell the Cobra one in a minute. When he was in the army, right? They had this group of soldiers were following them. So he said what they did was they put the shoes on back to front and walked with the shoes on back to front to bamboozle them.
Oh. What's the Cobra story, Don?
The Cobra one, I think he was saying if you ever get an encounter with a Cobra, you don't take your eyes off the Cobra's eyes. You stare at the eyes.
Right.
And then with your right hand, you sort of make a little sort of movement, sort of like that. You distract it, and then you grab it by the neck and wring its neck.
Wring my neck. Look at the birdie. Look at the birdie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey.
Wow.
Yeah. How many Cobras were there at Liverpool's training ground?
Cobras, crocodiles, all sorts.
Distract it.
Who would win a foot race at your peak, Don or Stevie?
I wasn't quick, but I was a cross country runner, so I could run for fun.
So, but you were slow. You were slow, Don, yeah?
Very slow. Very slow.
Yeah. Physically and no. Oh, okay, thank you very much. Wow. ESPN SC is back on your screens tomorrow.
Just percentages, that's all.
Hey, where were Ali? Where were you?
What? Oh, I would have been everybody. You know it, and you love it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.